Our reading this morning is from David White. We shape ourselves to fit this world, and by the world are shaped again, the visible and invisible, working together in common cause to produce the miraculous. I am thinking of the way the intangible air passed at speed round a shaped wing easily holds our weight. So may we in this life trust to those elements we have yet to see or imagine, and look for the true shape of our own self by forming it well to the great intangibles about us. So after those long ago Puritans traveled down the Charles River to their meadow in the golden sun, they did tell the governor that they wanted to name their town Contentment. But he denied it and told them to name their town Dedham after a town in England, which they dutifully did. The town, Dedham, Massachusetts, is still there, and so is one of the very first homes that they built. And so is the church that they started, called First Church and Parish in Dedham Unitarian Universalist. Interestingly, those early settlers in Dedham didn't even begin the conversation about about that church for nearly a year. And they didn't, in fact, start a church for 2 years. This fact really startled me when I learned it. The Puritans I imagined, which I had labeled under religious zealots, would have thrown up a church building instantly and began to listen to someone give forth about God and Christ and things like that as their very first act. But that stereotype about the Puritan missed an essential fact about who they were. They did not flee England about matters of belief and creed, but over what church is and how people should do church together. Belief-wise, the Puritans were Calvinists through and through. They believed in a harsh and judging God. They believed that people were essentially evil, and they believed that God saved a few and let the rest burn in hell. What made the Puritans different than other Calvinists was that they wanted free churches. They wanted churches where people, particularly those who knew they were saved and were the saints, came together freely to worship, to understand what God wanted of them in this life. In England, these people met and they talked and they talked and they talked to the point where Sarah Vowell wrote a book about them titled The Wordy Shipmates. They dreamed up what these free churches would be like. They also imagined a society and government where these free churches would be allowed to flourish. There were no free churches at that time in England. The Anglicans ran a very hierarchical church, were in charge of almost all the religious worship in England, and the King of England was head of that church. Another group had pulled away, called the Presbyterians, but they were led, another hierarchical church was led by ministers. But very few, actually only these people, were trying to create churches that were run by the congregation itself. So the first thing those people did when they went down the Charles River so long ago was create a town where a free church could flourish. The town had a set of rules, yes. They set up some basics of how people should behave, which just showed they'd been in human communities before. Life together is just better if you keep your pigs locked up so they're not rooting out other people's gardens or being eaten by wolves. And everyone has ladders for chimney fires so that everybody else's houses aren't catching on fire. However, the creation of their town was based mostly on covenant, not on rules and not on laws. And the covenant The people of the new town promised to live in love and to seek the best in one another and work out problems if they had them. For the settlers of Dedham, the creation of the church was more serious than the covenant, than the creation of a town. They wanted a free church where they were not told what to believe by any hierarchy, but were allowed to work out the truth of God and God's ways within a community of other people seeking the same truth. They wanted a church also where they were not told how to behave, but could work out the best way to be together based on their understanding of Christ and God, since they had been saved and brought to this earth to do that work. So they worked very, very carefully to create this church. They began holding meetings open to all who wished to attend, to, as they said, lovingly discourse and consult together on the questions as might further tend to establish of a peaceable and comfortable civil society and prepare for spiritual communion. Each Thursday, they met in a different home and discussed any issues as he felt the need, all humbly and with a teachable heart, not with any mind of cavilling or contradicting. They had some rules for these meetings. Rule one was that they chose the week before what they would discuss, so everyone would have time to think and reflect on the questions so they could discuss them more confidently. Rule two was that the host began the conversation and then everyone else would speak afterwards freely. And rule three was each person must speak from their own understanding and that they would not argue with one another. Believe me, if this was on a multiple choice test, these rules for when it happened during American history, I might have chosen 1970 women's circles or UU small group ministry, but I certainly would have never chosen 1630 Puritans. But there it is. These citizens of Dedham recorded that their conversations were very peaceable, loving, and tender, much to edification. Then one week they asked themselves, should we even create a church? Why don't we just keep getting together and meeting and talking? And their answer was this. The spiritual condition of even deeply loving people is such as stand in need of all instituted helps for the repair of the spirit and the edification of the whole body of the church. I just really love this. The spiritual condition of even deeply loving people is as such stand in need of all instituted helps for the repair of the spirit and the edification of the whole body of the church. Is there anything new under the sun? This is why I believe church is important. Even good people, even loving people, need a church to repair their spirit and hold up together their work together. As the Puritans of Dedham established their church, they turned again to the concept of covenant. The basis as they understood it, not only of their town, but as people who gather in a free church. A covenant, making promises to each other, would hold them together as a group who sought ways to be loving people together. Within the church, members would be free to express their own understandings of what it meant to be a person of God and work with others to refine this understanding. The Dedham group really liked to talk and to write. It seems much more other than other groups of Puritans, which is probably why we know so much about them, like that they met on Thursdays. So their covenant is really, really long, and it's way too long for me to tell you in this sermon. But other Puritans wrote shorter, very similar covenants. So I share with you the covenant from the Salem Church, which was written in 1629. We covenant with the Lord and one with another, and do bind ourselves to the presence of God, to walk together in all His ways, according as He is pleased to reveal Himself unto us in His blessed word of truth. Here is a modern adaptation of the Pilgrim's Covenant. We pledge to walk together in ways of truth and affection, as best we understand them now and may learn them in the days to come, that we and our children might be fulfilled, and that we might speak to the world in words and actions of peace and goodwill. In churches all over New England, the congregations did indeed walk together to learn the ways of love and of God. So much that over time, at least half of the congregations had begun in those early 1600s had abandoned Calvinist theology 150 years later. This was possible because there was no one in a hierarchical position demanding that individual congregations and its members hold up a certain creed or beliefs, that generations and generations just had to sort of help fit into their way of being. Instead, these congregations actually did what they said they were going to do. They walked together and were open to change their understanding of God. In Salem, they said, as God is pleased to reveal to us His ways of truth. In the modern version of the Pilgrim's Covenant, they said they'd walk together in the ways of truth and affection as best we understand them now and may learn about them in the days to come. So for over 150 years, these congregations came to believe that their conversations and through their conversations and reflection, that God was in fact good and that people were not necessarily evil and could work on themselves to become truly good people. The beliefs in these congregations were able to change because what held them together as a church was not belief or hierarchy, but covenant and a commitment to each other to live in love and seek to understand God and to understand truth. These churches that believed in the potential goodness of people and God were pushed fundamentally by those churches who still had Calvinistic thoughts to declare themselves as different, and they became Unitarians. But they never abandoned the idea of being a free church, of coming together as a thinking, loving congregation to worship and understand God. Those first Unitarians of the 19th century certainly do not have a theology that would be familiar or comfortable with most of us, and our theology would certainly not be comfortable to them. But they would recognize in our churches our understanding of what it means to be a church, to come together freely, to walk together, to explore love and peace, and to bring goodness into our lives and into the lives of others. While our ideas of what it means to organize ourselves in churches has not changed much in 400 years, the actual writing and speaking of covenant itself has had an inconsistent fate. Some Unitarian Universalists congregations stand in worship each week and repeat their covenant to each other. And when they join, they agree to their covenant. Some congregations have rewritten their covenant so recently that people in the congregation remember it, which I'm sure is true for many of you here at WOOF. Others have caught covenants written long before anyone in the congregation was even alive. Other congregations recite very traditional covenants that are used by many congregations, and they're printed in our hymnal. Covenant 473 is an example. Love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek truth in love, and to help one another. This covenant is easily recognizable as the great-great-grandchild of that first of those first covenants. The purpose of the church, they say, is to be together, to seek truth, and to help one another. Some Unitarian Universalist churches do not read a covenant each week or even talk about covenant much at all. I came up in a church like that. I didn't know that we were covenantal faith until I went to seminary, actually. Even though people generally agree with that general idea that we are here together freely to seek truth together and to seek love together. Wolf has done something that is very common in UU congregations today. This congregation has divided its covenant into two parts, a mission statement that says why we gather and a covenant of right relations that says how we are together with each other when we gather. At Wolf, our mission statement reads, and you are free to say it with me, we plant seeds of inspiration, we grow in compassionate community, and bloom in service to the wider world. Members covenant to carry out the mission of this congregation. At Wolf, we also have a covenant of right relations, which is longer, and we do not read it in every service. It's about a page and a half, actually. But we do have a summary of it, and it reads in part, we covenant with our fellow congregants, staff, and board of trustees to strive to live in harmony, entering into these agreements both as free individuals and as integral parts of the community. In Wolf's covenant, we agree to hold ourselves accountable for our personal behavior and communication by maintaining civility and compassion in the face of differences, acknowledging that we all make mistakes, and being generous with both apology and forgiveness. We agree to strengthen our community by adding our personal commitment, informed opinions, gifts, and efforts to the diverse mix of values and personalities that make us who we are, and attending to the business of being together in this fellowship. And we are called upon to encourage and support each other's personal growth and to honor the democratic process, practices of shared ministry, and collaborative leadership. And the truth about covenants is we will break them. We will break our promises because we are people and people just do that. If we spend enough time together, we will forget about peace and seeking goodness in each other. We will fight. We will say bitter things. We will gossip and tell stories and hurt each other. We will, from time to time, when we are tired and threatened, forget to seek truth in love. But we'll hold our truth as the truth, contemning others for the silliness and stupidity of their views. We will forget to help each other, either because we are too distracted by life or because we don't think we really should help in that situation. It's inevitable. We all do these things from time to time in small or sometimes in pretty large ways. But Martin Buber reminds us that as much as we break promises, we will restore them as well. We realign our lives with our promises. And if we don't, if we can't, we are so fortunate to be surrounded by people who promised with us, who hopefully are having a better day or month or year, who can remind us in love the promises that we made to each other and other members of this community to help us return to the path of peace and of love. The process of breaking covenant and coming back into covenant is not always easy. It is often very messy and uncomfortable. It is a process we go through again and again as we grow spiritually and ethically and become capable of deeper, more meaningful relationships We grow as people inside that mess of breaking promises and renewing our promises. Last week, in this sanctuary, covenant was broken, and before Sunday morning, it was renewed. Before Sunday morning was over, it was renewed. And this is our faith at its very best. And I want you to know that I tell this story with the complete collaboration of the people who are involved with that situation. So the moment last Sunday the covenant was broken was startling and awkward and uncomfortable. A speaker unintentionally, mistakenly, said a phrase that was insensitive to the experiences of people of color. And she did not notice she'd done that. Some felt, as those words were spoken, the break of covenant, of our covenant, to create space in our congregation that is emotionally safe for all people. So a member of the congregation responded, and in that moment broke our covenant to be always to be civil and to not interrupt as she called out during the service. When she called out, however, she was attempting to bring the speaker back into covenant by calling attention to the fact that the speaker had disparaged marginalized people, as absolutely as unintentional as that was, so the speaker could correct it publicly for all of us. The speaker came back into covenant as she realized her mistake and apologized. And the return to covenant continued after the service when both people acknowledged their particular mistakes, listened to each other, apologized, and forgave. How Puritan was that? People were held together in a covenant while learning the ways of love. In this case, learning how to undo that white supremacy that just gets so twisted inside us sometimes. Only can we get rid of that when we move it out of us. And then we can live in peace and in love. This means sometimes we're going to make mistakes on the way to moving that out of us and learning from them. And so in this instant, there was learning new ways of love. But how messy it was. Humans make mistakes like humans just do. And there was pain and embarrassment, which there often is when there is a mistake. There is a strangeness of breaking. And then there was the strangeness of, at one moment, breaking covenant and trying to keep covenant. That's a mess. But how full of love it was. There was a commitment through covenant to return to right relationship. There were apologies, kindness, compassion, and forgiveness. And in all of that, there was healing. So long ago, those 30 families went from into the wilderness to create a beloved community where love and peace and the ways of God would carry them through. And it was uncomfortable. Believe me, they left all their people. They got on a ship where they were horribly seasick. They were hungry. They lived out in the wilderness with no food and no grocery stores and no help. It was uncomfortable, but they deemed that journey worth it. Their descendants kept opening the circle of love. Our ancestors have done that, fighting against slavery, being pacifists, saying it was okay to be good people without believing in God. And that was also really uncomfortable. People got arrested. People died. People were ostracized by their families. But they deemed looking for the ways of God and love and peace absolutely worth it. And we are widening that circle still. And yes, sometimes it's dreadfully uncomfortable. But more peace and love in the world is completely worth it. And I feel so blessed, and I hope you do as well, that we come from a tradition, a long, long tradition of holding covenants, of making promises to help us through that very hard work of creating beloved community. We are held in the hands of our ancestors, in the hands of love, as we do all the hard work of being beloved people, of living in community. Creating beloved community is holy work, and we need each other. We need the free church to do it. And I hope that all of us do it together. Amen.
Please. Questions and discussion, so if you'll raise your hand, I will bring the mic to you.
Tracy, in our chalice circles, we were encouraged to develop covenants for each chalice circle. Do you see that as a kind of practice for being in community with a larger congregation?
Yes. I think believing practicing covenant is always a really good idea within Unitarian Universalist congregations, just because that is sort of foundational to who we are. And so always practicing that, even in meetings that we have together or in chalice circles or whatever, helps us take on that spiritual practice of having a covenant, but also trying to follow it and also calling people back in when the covenant gets broken. So I think that's foundational to our faith.
Thank you for all this great background to know about our history. I wonder if you can bridge the gap for me. I imagine it's rather complicated, the evolution from Puritan to Unitarian. But
I know, it's crazy, right?
If you could summarize, did they just kind of dissolve into us, or
no,
did they splinter?
There was an extreme amount of conflict, as you might imagine. And I actually don't have that history right at the tips of my fingertips, but really it was having these conversations over time, and there was a man called Charles Chauncey, and he started writing about kind of this idea that conversion didn't just happen in this lightning flash like other people felt like you were, and people still do, like you immediately just feel your connection with Jesus or God and you're converted, but just this process of growing as being a person who can grow into goodness, that the conversion happens over time, that commitment to faith, that commitment to being a person of love and goodness. And Leslie is also a UU minister who studied all this, so if you have anything to say, Leslie, you can just add it. What happened actually was in the early 1800s, there was a lot of conflict between the churches that were still Calvinists, who called themselves, Congregationalists? They called themselves Congregationalists, and the Unitarian group. And so they were actually, they had this fight about Harvard was originally established by the Puritans. They were very into education and learning. And so the chair of the religious department or seminary or whatever they called that piece, there was a big fight about who would get it, the people who had the more Unitarian beliefs or people who had the more Congregationalist, more Calvinist beliefs. And the Unitarians won that, and there was a huge schism at that point. And that's when Unitarians declared themselves as something else. And actually, Unitarians didn't name themselves. It was actually an insult given to them, because Unitarians really believed there was this idea of reason. You use reason. God gave your mind to you to be able to understand things, which really came out of our Puritan heritage, that we can learn things. So they felt like they read the Bible and reason told them, you know, the Trinity was not in the Bible, which in fact it's not. And so they just started being like, well, maybe that's not really the true theology, which was absolutely blasphemous in every way imaginable. And so they were, the people would insult them by calling them Unitarians, but the name kind of stuck and here we are. Looking at Leslie, did I get that right?
I think it was really interesting you were mentioning about not rushing to church, but having those meetings. And I think that there are conversations that have happened over the years, or might still be going on now, about who we are together. Are we a meeting? Are we a lecture? Are we learning? Are we a meditative something, and I think that I'm with the little girl who raised her hand and said, maybe.
I'm with her too, actually. Maybe.
I just wanted to reassure everyone that in our religious exploration classroom, we do talk about classroom agreements. We write them, we post them, we refer to them. The word covenant may not have been familiar, but we definitely have an agreement that the participants are part of.
And I totally assumed since that was true, because that is just what we do at RE. I wasn't thinking we were not doing that.
I had an unusual reaction when the word covenant first came up in our chalice circle. I grew up in Scotland, where there was a nasty little war fought over covenant. In this case, it was I understand now, it was a covenant with God and not a covenant between people. And your talk this morning was very illuminating, and I have much better understanding of the covenant that we share.
Right.
And this morning has helped me enormously.
Oh, I'm glad.
But Scotland was fighting a bloody little war at the same time your Puritans were making their way down the Charles River. And learning about that war as a teenager in high school still is with me. Hence my reaction in Chalice Circle.
And so I imagine, I mean, I think it's true. I mean, I don't think the saints were like these great people. Well, I mean, they were great people in some ways, but they were really blind. Like, I suspect they were like thinking everybody should do it our way. Like, I mean, maybe. I don't know that much about that war, but I suspect those people were cousins or something of these people. And yeah, I mean, they just went and took the Native Americans' land. I mean, that's the learning we're still doing. I mean, they just didn't see them as people. Like, they had a very small idea of who they were in covenant with. And I think one of the great things about Unitarian Universalism now is we are learning to walk in the ways of love and peace, and we realize that we have to have covenant also with all of life and with people who are not us, you know, not exactly ours personally, but are in the world and are different, and bringing them into our circle. And I think that's the work of, like, are we there yet? Well, you know, we still can keep going.
I have a question. If there's not the grace to deal with it right in the moment, does the church have a process to help people resolve breaks in covenant?
Yes. So the Committee on Ministry is the group that does that here. So if there's been a break in covenant, and you're not really feeling like you can just go talk to that person, which is the complete ideal. But a lot of times those are very painful, and people get, I mean, it can be hard. And so we have a group called the Committee on Ministry, and if you have any concerns and you want to maybe just talk it out with the people on the Committee on Ministry, or if you want somebody to kind of help you with that, you know, help have a conversation or help some way to do that, we definitely have the resources for that. So you could get in touch with me and other people on the committee.
Thank you, Tracy.